everybody. This is Mark Manoukian of Tegeler Brown Hill and Ritter and the ILTA Emerging Technologies Steering Committee. With me today is my buddy Lance Ray, also of
hello.
The Emerging Technologies Peer Group. Sorry, Lance, say hello again.
Hey, everybody. all our dedicated listeners out there, hello.
Yes. So today we are we're interviewing some guys from the server and operations security peer group. All I know is it's SOSPG. Apparently there's two guys on the phone with us today. Lance, who do we have with us?
Yeah, we have Stephen Schock from IREL and Manila, and Jamie Herman from Ropes and Gray.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit more about what you two guys do at Ropes and Gray and IREL and Manila.
So I'm at Ropes and Gray. I manage information security for the firm. And you know, handles everything from software and development side of the house up through architecture, infrastructure, desktop applications, vulnerability management, everything the gamut globally. So it obviously keeps me busy.
All right. And that was Jamie?
Yes.
And how big is your firm?
I believe we're right around 1,100 attorneys right now, probably about 2,300 total users.
All right, so a small firm.
Yeah, pretty small.
No, I'm kidding.
Small fish in the big pond.
Right. And what kind of law do you practice?
Me? I don't practice any, thankfully. Everyone's better off without me practicing it. The firm has several practice areas. IP, litigation, life sciences, private client, they run the gamut. I could probably read you the list off the website, but I've been with the firm close to 10 months now after 5.5 years at another international smaller firm. So, I'm not as familiar with the practice groups as I was there, as I handled architecture there. So I was a bit more integrated with every, single piece of what's going on. So here, the groups that I tend to interact with more, obviously, is what I'm more familiar with. But we have a handful of practice areas outside of the ones I mentioned.
Excellent. And Stephen?
Stephen, IREL. I am the Chief Technology Officer for the firm, and I oversee everything technology. So I oversee user experience, app dev, our engineering group, telephony, you name it. If it has something to do with technology, that falls under my umbrella.
All right. And how big is your firm?
We are currently about 200 attorneys, about 350, 380 users at the moment.
And what areas of law does your firm practice?
We are listed as a full-service firm, but our primary practice is IP litigation. Along with IP litigation, we also do securities, SEC litigation. We have a transactional practice that's very active. Bankruptcy, and I said transactional, huh? Let me run back through the circle.
Sure.
So, but primary IP litigation, lots of litigation here.
Excellent. So, we know there's been a departure from the ILTA ranks by Carlos Rodriguez, and that left a vacancy. Do we know who the new PGVP for your peer group will be, or when we can expect to know?
We do not know, but an announcement is coming soon. We do know that.
Excellent. And you recently had a conference in Chicago for the annual LegalSec conference. And so let's talk a little bit about that. I wasn't able to attend. Lance, did you attend?
I wasn't able either.
All right, so why don't you guys tell us what happened there?
Yeah, sure.
What's on the short list?
I'll go first. This is Jamie from Ropes. So this is our first conference, LegalSec, obviously the first LegalSec summit that we've had following about a year and a half of Carlos's hard work to kick this off. And there's a few different teams headed up myself, Kevin Moore, and Tim Golden head up the three different groups within LegalSec. So, we were very hopeful that the turnout would be good, and I think, we exceeded what our original expectation was. And you know, we're already talking about making it a longer conference, maybe over 2 days next year versus the 1 day it was this year. But from an information standpoint, we had a great keynote presentation from a field officer for the field agent for the FBI in the Chicago office, who spoke and gave some pretty good statistics about specific attacks and cases that we really haven't seen anywhere from more of the general FBI presentations us in legal have seen. And I think the great thing about it, and Steve could certainly expand on this, is, you know, I haven't been involved with ILTA, you know, more than about a year and a half, 2 years personally, outside of the conferences, going to the conferences. So it's really a peer model, as Steve will expand on. It's driven by peers. So the camaraderie there and the information sharing from the speakers that are working at these firms and on the front lines to the people giving feedback and having the conversations and asking questions at the sessions was just tremendous value for people that are, you know, on the more mature side of the maturity model in security at their firm to the people that are just kicking off trying to get some of these questions answered and risk mitigated.
That's great.
I had a quick question here. So about how many sessions did you guys have and what was the attendance like? How many attendees and what did you expect? Were the numbers good?
So I don't know the exact number. I know we were shooting for getting 100, you know, attendees outside of the speakers and whatnot. And I think we went over that number by, 15% or 20% or something.
Yeah, we did exceed 100.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was definitely good. As far as sessions, I mean, I'm gonna guess here, but there was between maybe 10 sessions. There were two different tracks going on. There might have been 12 sessions. There was a technical and a management track. And you know, the sessions were so good on each side. It was a struggle, actually. I mean, there were some sessions I wanted to attend to on one track, you know, but I attended a different one because you just had to kind of select in the end. But I think it was about that. Steve could correct me if I'm wrong. I think
it's I think it was, I think we had 8 sessions. So we had 4 on the technical track and 4 on the managerial track. It felt like 12 with all the information we got.
But the most important question is, was the food any good? No, I'm kidding. So anyway.
Chicago Fair. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Gee, burgers and Pepsi.
It's a fair attempt at Chicago dogs for lunch.
There you go.
So, did you guys want to tell us anything else about LegalSec?
Well, unlike Jamie, I don't come from a security background. That's Jamie's forte and what he does, and I'm more of a generalist in technology. I come from more of a server and storage side. So, I had a couple of involvements with this, which was nice. From SOSPG, I was on the committee as a liaison from our group, which is great for me. It was a great education. It was great to be involved. But just showing up and listening to, you know, these more seasoned veterans in the space talk about how they're doing it and what they're doing it. I mean, expanding again on the peer group portion of this, it's a direct extension of how we do the ILTA conference. I mean, it is a peer-driven session, and it's not a group of vendors trying to sell you a solution. It's really,
right,
you know, the guys we rub elbows with every day talking about how they do it and maybe this might be a good way to do it. I got a lot out of it. I really was impressed with the FBI agent that did the keynote. Not only the information he brought, but he had some real-world examples that really opened up our eyes to how some of the breaches are happening out there, you know, things you wouldn't expect.
Yeah,
especially since law firms have been, you know, targeted more often.
Targeted lately. And I feel like we've seen a lot of agendas with somebody from the FBI speaking. And
yeah.
It sounds like you got something a little bit off the menu on this particular occasion.
Yeah, so, you know, it is true, and I've been to, you know, I think they're doing them everywhere, and I'm sure Steven's been to a couple of these, and I'd say of the last 5 that I've seen agents speak at, going back to 2011, when General Alexander, who heads up the NSA, actually spoke at the conference, at Fordham, they usually give you kind of the same line of, you know, information sharing is important and whatnot. And you know, legal firms need to call us if they believe they're breached, and you know, we'll work with them, which I don't think any of us truly believe. But supposedly the model is changing, they claim. So this is definitely a welcome deviation from kind of that normal script, if you call it that,
right,
of these are the approved slides by the FBI. You know, tell you that these nations are hacking us. We're seeing this percentage increase. We actually got real-world case examples, you know, from insider threat to an outside penetration hacking. So it was, like Steve said, I mean, it was certainly valuable, I think, whether you were in security specifically or just from a technology standpoint.
Right.
Absolutely.
Not your grandfather's.
I really appreciated what the agent said, too, at the end was, you know, get in touch with your field office, you know, whether you have something going on or not, but be friendly with your FBI field office. Because when it happens and you ring the bell, you know, it's a good relationship to have, you know, because you're
right.
Going to get a lot of help from them, actually.
That's great.
And hey, are you guys familiar with InfraGuard, the FBI InfraGuard program?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm actually a member of that here in the New York chapter, and it's pretty good as far as getting info. You know, you get kind of news alerts on things that are happening in and around the city, and we have weekly calls where we talk about security issues with people who are in other verticals like manufacturing or financial or that kind of thing. It's a good resource.
Excellent. In August, we have the ILSA conference. Do you guys want to tell us what you guys are doing at the conference?
We're doing something, that's for sure. Server ops, SOS has got six sessions this year. They're surprisingly named SOS PG 1 through 6. So they're easy to find in the book.
Right.
We've got a responding to a security breach session. I think Jamie's involved in that one.
Yeah. That's I'm looking forward to that session, not just because I'm involved with it. To be fair, we actually have Ted Thiessen, and I might be saying his name correctly. So he's actually was an FBI agent. Or in their cyber investigation unit. He left to go to Kroll, and from there he actually went to work at the Executive Office of President Obama on the information assurance cybersecurity side, and he recently left to go back to Kroll to work in their cyber investigations division. That's obviously expanding exponentially at this point. And another gentleman, I believe Jason Strait, who's the managing director of that group, he's an attorney. So the speakers have real hands-on experience with, you know, some tremendous breaches, and not just the breach. You know, so I think, you know, so much of what law firms and corporations out there are reading and being told at these conferences is really around how do you protect yourself against a breach. You know, what product do you buy to identify a breach? And I think what Ted and Jason are going to speak to specifically is, okay, you've been breached. Now what? Let's walk through some real-world examples of what we've seen, what we've done, and we being them, and what can you take away from here as far as, you know, action points of things you need to have in place, what you need to be prepared for, how do you handle it, you know, making sure your incident response plan is in place. Have you done any red team exercises to make sure that should something go wrong, every person involved or whoever's involved along that escalation chain knows who to identify and contact throughout that process. So I think it's going to be a real value add for anyone attending it, whether you're on the engineering side, you know, up through general counsel at a company or firm.
Right. Excellent.
Right.
So what other sessions are you guys putting on?
Look, we've got more security, network access controls. And as Brophy stated in this, NAC being NAC, not the NAC. And I'm not sure who's on that session, but they're going to talk about network access control, layers of security for networks, dealing with BYOD, those type of topics within that session.
Excellent.
Which takes us to a big one. Managing desktop and server infrastructure with Microsoft SCCM 2012, the new version.
Right. So that's a relatively recent server product release from Microsoft. And do either of you guys use System Center?
This is Stephen at IRL. Yes, we are a SCCM shop. SCCM and SCOM, I guess they're getting kind of pushed together now, but we are currently in the process of moving over to 2012. I think actually our migration started this week.
How's that going?
It's gone almost seamless. I think they've got the transition down very well between versions now. You can run them side by side and not affect the AD schema, which is nice. Last time around, going from like 2003 to 2007, it was impossible to run side by side.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but now you can bring up your 2012 environment right alongside your existing 2007 and then start migrating your clients.
So I'm a little confused about what System Center includes, because it seems like Microsoft has maybe bundled some things together that maybe weren't bundled together in the past. And I don't need to understand it all, at least right now. But tell us a little bit more about what's included under the System Center umbrella. I mean, does that include, for example, Operations Manager and Configuration Manager and Virtual Machine Manager? I'm under the impression that those were separate items in the past, but those are now included in System Center. Is that correct, incorrect, or too long a story for this interview?
Yeah, I personally, I'm not under the hood enough with it. I would have to get an engineer over here, one of my supermen, who were hands on with it. But from listening to them, there are a number of things that are bundling in. They've expanded on a number of the existing pieces. I think patch management is much more robust, and dispersal of packages installation is quite a bit easier now. Those are some big ones from my side, I think.
Well, that session is well timed for me, so
yeah,
I'll be there. How much does it cost?
It's free to all ILTA members.
Awesome. Free for you guys. Free for you too.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So that covers the first three sessions of your six sessions. What else you guys got?
Well, we've got a session on titled "Your Virtualized Now What," and we're going to kind of explore what we do after virtualization. I think on the last ILTA survey, over 85% of all the firms that responded were virtualized in some capacity, whether it was fully virtualized or they've got a bit of virtualization in and we're migrating. So our conversation around that really turns to, hey, we're all virtualized now. What's the next steps? You know, and we're going to cover topics from, we're going to touch on continuity and disaster recovery, replication, backup. We're going to talk about infrastructure as a service. Where does your data center reside now? I personally, once you get into a virtualized mode, I consider the data center somewhat portable, you know, and
right.
You know, does it really need to exist within the walls of your firm?
Right. So you've got a couple more sessions. I think the next one is what, tips for data center preservation?
That's right. That's going to be centered more around around the strategies, technologies to consider for protecting your data center. So it's really going to deep dive into BC and disaster recovery.
And that's a good reminder that DRBC also falls under your administration within the ILTA org. And you guys have an e-group dedicated to DRBC.
Oh, yeah.
How active is that group? I mean, I think I'm subscribed to it. I see some stuff come across, but I think in digest form, so I don't really have a take on how active it is.
I'm the same. I get the digest on it, so it's not quite, I wouldn't say it's as active as just like the title group, but there's quite a bit of posting that goes on in there. And it's funny. I think it is really thanks to virtualization, because it kind of changes the game on how you protect your infrastructure.
Yeah.
There's a lot of tools out there. There's a lot of questions. It's really, hey, I need to do this. How are you doing it? You know, I know there's you know, now there's five options to replicate my infrastructure. How are you doing it? What's the best option?
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to DRBC, that's kind of like the most boring thing that, or one of the most boring things I can do that employees never see.
Yeah.
Until I need it. And then if I haven't done it, I get fired.
Yeah, it's the most boring thing you do, but it is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Next to, you know, securing your walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I think that's a great point. And to what you were saying is it's not kind of one of those, you know, really attractive technology solutions where you're going to put it in and something's faster or enables them to have better workflow or something like that.
Yeah. Users never see it until it fails.
Exactly. But what we're also seeing an increase on some of the client security audits that are going around where they're asking for specifics. They want to see your BCP policy, your DR strategy. They want to know if you've tested it annually. They want to know the results. In some cases, you know, they want to know the specifics around that. What are your RTOs? What are your RPOs around that client's data being accessed? So it's becoming more and more integrated in the security conversation, but above and beyond. Obviously, it's critical to just the operational side of the business and you know, critical systems being up and running, the business being able to, you know, make money. So I think, as with other stuff, that as soon as it enters that security threshold, it suddenly becomes elevated within the profile of what do we need to get done. I think you're now seeing business continuity and DR suddenly being elevated into that, crossing over that line, if you will, which I don't think it necessarily makes it more important to do than just impacting the business as a whole. I think certainly if the business can't function and everything's down, well, there's obviously not much of a threat there if no one could access anything. But it's certainly getting more visibility to you know, say, speak to what Shock said, and it's certainly becoming a bit more visible to people because of the requests from clients now.
Yeah, that's a super good point. I mean, about requests from clients. We're not there yet. We're a smaller firm. We're about 80 attorneys, but it's good to hear from our larger brethren that, you know, this is what we can expect. So, thank you.
I agree. We're not a firm. We're not a big firm. We're a mid-size, and thankfully our practice areas and the type of law we do have not opened us up to a lot of audit. You know, we do get questions from clients, but, you know, we're not in banking or healthcare, and so we don't get hit with those big audits. From the big financial institutions, big healthcare providers. So, but it's coming, and we know, along with, you know, how secure are you? It's how, you know, are you going to fall apart? If there's an earthquake in Southern California, are you guys going to exist? So, that's big on our mind out here.
Well, there was a topic I was going to hold off on till later in this discussion, but maybe this is a good time to mention HIPAA. I mean, you know, when we talk about the things that drive us to make these decisions and implement these practices and procedures, the recent changes in the HIPAA omnibus rule redefines a business associate. So you mentioned that you're not in healthcare. Historically, we don't consider that we're in healthcare either.
Yeah.
But, for example, we have a workers' comp practice, and so we do, and we do have litigated matters where medical records we were provided medical records, and so you know, now those omnibus rules, the HIPAA omnibus rules, once they go into effect is September 23rd, they will apply to us. So that's how we look at it. I mean, do you feel like HIPAA is driving you guys to change any of your policies or procedures?
This, Stephen, I guess just a quick comment on it. I agree. We are, when I say we're not do healthcare, we don't do this, but we do intellectual property litigation around medications, and we work with pharmaceuticals. And my fear is in this vast amount of discovery that comes in electronically. I don't know what is buried within there. I may have somebody's healthcare information. There may be trial information in there about people.
Right.
So, you know, we're keeping we're keeping a close eye on this, and we're trying to work on solutions around how do we cull that data, not just from, you know, a review and production point of view, but also just having a good handle on what kind of content is out there, so that we're not violating rules, HIPAA, or any other privacy act. I mean, the Massachusetts privacy has been a big one for a while, and it kind of plays into how this HIPAA omnibus works. Right.
Yeah, I mean it's great. I mean, our Ropes and Graves' largest office is in Boston, so mass data privacy is for quite some time kind of put us already in line with this, and just normal practices has aligned us pretty well with you know some of the requirements coming from HIPAA. But there are things like business associate agreement template forms that need to be revised is one of the takeaways from the HIPAA changes.
Right.
Contractor agreements that you need to determine whether modifications or provisions, need to be made to those existing agreements. Any HIPAA policies or procedures you have, including, responding to potential breaches, including PHI. If you have notices of privacy practices, you have to update those, redistribute them to the firm. Just review your kind of arrangements and compliance with restrictions, if your place that does this on the sale of PHI, which obviously hopefully most law firms do not partake in that.
Right.
And you have to train employees and update them on what their obligations is. And I think, this is certainly a key for human resources groups amongst others, because they deal so much with benefits and onboarding of attorneys and medical insurance issues. So I think it's certainly important there. And the nice thing is this falls in line with a time when law firms are really pushing security awareness training across the board. So a lot of this is being worked into the security awareness training model and how you need to transmit this type of data, what you need to do, what's the proper incident response policy if you send something to the wrong place, do we have any DLP solution to prevent data leakage going to the wrong address or going outside the firm unencrypted if it's PHI. So I think it's not necessarily, new conversations. It's, again,
right,
the same way a lot of the security issues are. It's just raising visibility on, let's just make sure, kind of all the I's are dotted, all the T's are crossed on how we handle confidential information and PHI information. And it's a healthy conversation to have whether the omnibus rule changes took effect. I think, we have till, I think it's September 23rd is when the covered entities generally have to comply.
I believe so.
Yeah, so I think it's brought about a healthy conversation internally with the business across different departments, but I think it's a conversation that was generally happening sporadically, and it's something that just needed to happen anyway. So, it's helped to open up a little bit more communication on the type of data and how that data is being moved around across different departments in the firm and what that data is.
I'll tell you, we're talking about it more. And regardless of how I feel about it, it's been a very healthy conversation. So, people are coming to me saying, hey, I think we need to pursue this business policy. Can you make the associated technical changes, rather than me coming to them saying, hey, I think you should do it, like this. I mean, I think you should tighten this security risk, so to speak. So anyway, let's talk about your last session, IPv6, from assessment to pilot. What do you guys want to tell us about that?
I could talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
So, IPv6 has certainly gotten quite a bit of press lately for some time, just because of its expanded space as far as IP addressing, some of the security features in it. Just kind of to keep it brief, because there's people far more technical than I am that on the infrastructure side that could probably speak better to this, but there's a great website that's worth checking out for everyone, which is ipv6actnow.org. That's actnow.org. It's got some really good information about, checking if your organization is ready to go to IPv6, some concerns, pitfalls, best practices, all kinds of information, which I probably haven't seen most of it, but there's a lot on there, so I definitely recommend that to everyone looking to get kind of the Cliff Notes version of what they need to be concerned with.
Excellent.
you know, the big concerns I think around IPv6 are probably not very different from you know, any, you know, IPv4 protocol or any system for that matter. But, you know, one of the big concerns cited by some of the experts out there was, you know, poor configuration and implementation due to a lack of experience when this is implemented is a big concern, and for obvious reasons. You know, there's expanded numbering space. You're running multiple versions of IP, version 4 and version 6 on your network with applications. You need to understand what enabling it or configuring devices to communicate, you know, with it causes on your network, or what any drawbacks or any benefits are, so you can take advantage of them, obviously. So I think, you know, recommendation there is get an experienced consulting company, or, you know, someone that really has done this before in an enterprise or an operation where they've seen, you know, the ins and outs of it. They're probably going to be a little harder to find than someone that you need to install, you know, a Citrix server. But I think it's worth, you know, finding the right group. And you know, to speak to what we were talking about, the peer model with ILTA, it's a great form to reach out and say, does anyone have an experience, you know, to the peer group emails, and just, does anyone have experience implementing IPv6? Do they recommend anyone in this area? It usually yields some pretty good results for people, from what I've seen. Yeah, some other attacks, because of the large address space, there's flooding attack concerns, which are similar to, you know, IPv4, flooding the larger address space with a lot more requests, which denial of service and things like that could be subject of. Running IPv6 and v4 together, as I mentioned, there's dual stack attacks, which is, you know, the IPv4 and v6 could be transparent in applications over both protocols, but, you know, then non-interoperable at the same time, and the security issues there, obviously. If you have an application that communicates over IPv6 and you just by default and you didn't configure it, you just have to make sure that, you know, you're aware of how things are communicating when you're enabling any kind of protocol, to be fair, any port. Spoofing attacks, as with any, you know, IP protocol, ports and IP information should be a consideration. And then there's extension headers in IPv6, which is subject to header manipulation and could be used to get around access lists on routers and firewalls. And that's basically devices at the end host processing the router headers and forwarding them per the exploited header instructions to somewhere else than where they need to go. So, you know, in summary, you know, what this all comes down to is read up on it. It's certainly something worth reading and gaining more information on. But talk to your peers and get a consultant in there that's well-versed in this and understand before you kind of jump on the bandwagon and say, we need to be IPv6 by this date and start, you know, configuring it on every device. Just understand, you know, why you're doing it, what you're doing it for, you know, what benefits you take away from it, and if there's any new risks introduced, you know, how do you mitigate them as an organization?
I'm going to do exactly what Jamie says.
No, it's funny. I wrote down the web address, so I'm all set.
Yeah, me too.
I have very little experience with IPv6, and but I do know, you know, with some of the new applications, you know, Exchange is a good example. You know, when we first started standing up the latest version, not the 2012, but the 2010 version of Exchange, we were shutting off IPv6 on the servers, and it completely it hoses your Exchange infrastructure, because even though you're not running IPv6, it needs to be there for some reason. Why?
Yeah,
I have no
idea.
Yeah,
we found that too.
But, you know, it's funny. It's not there, but it's integrated. And
IPv6 is a funny thing. I can tell you that, you know, 3 years running, I've come back from the ILTA conference after attending an IPv6 session with a list of things to try and a lab to set up. And it's just one of those things that just like...
Yeah, exactly.
You just don't get
around
to doing.
That goes to the question of, you know, every year we hear how IPv6 is coming, and I think something's going to break if I don't implement it tomorrow.
Yeah.
What are the timelines? How urgent is it?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's, you know, an urgent thing. I think you'll find most newer networking equipment is IPv6 compatible. We've seen some alerts in some of our systems or log events related to IPv6 addresses. So you certainly starting to see some things communicate or attempt to communicate over IPv6. You know, it's less about, you know, IPv4 is not going to go out of support. I mean, it's not that kind of thing. So, you know, I don't think it's as much a concern. This is more of, you know, as everyone moves forward with newer equipment and newer gear and newer systems, whether it's, you know, Server 2012 or SharePoint 2013 or the newer Exchange, it's just to be conscious of it and understand that, you know, if I'm building a new office out or I'm building a new data center or I'm moving my data center to a co-location or a hosted data center, you know, is IPv6 worth just setting up off the bat? And, you know, are there any advantages to doing this, not just to do it for the sake of doing it because, you know, a network engineer really wants to configure IPv6?
Right.
You know, it should really be done for business reason. And if the reason is, well, down the road we're going to have to revisit this, and why, you know, duplicate effort and resources, and let's just do it and set it up from the get-go, you know, just make sure that you cover those pitfalls and concerns if you are going to enable it, whether you're using it or not, you know, and understand what applications do communicate over it and what you can and can't disable. So I wouldn't say there's a timeline on it. I would say it's something that if anyone's, you know, moving forward and planning from a technology standpoint, they should be looking at, you know, as part of the project planning effort to incorporate some resource time for IPv6 discussions or planning and configuration time.
I assumed that when the public internet address space ran out of numbers in V4, we would just be in V6 then.
Right.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I thought too.
I thought that was the scheduled time to change when we just ran out of numbers in public numbers in V4. So
that's exactly right. I mean, there's an intuitive sense that we're out of numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the scare tactic with IPv6. Is like we're going to run out with V4.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's certainly not going to be a digital TV cut over where as of this date your cable TV won't work anymore unless you get this box. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I think you know, obviously addresses are freed up constantly, but as, you know, as they finally get finished up giving them out, I think, you know, you're just going to start seeing IPv6 addresses issued. But again, you know, everyone's still going to have these IPv4, you know, blocks of addresses that they're going to be using. They're not going to suddenly just toss them back. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good
Excellent.
Point.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, listen, guys, we are out of time. And so, I wanted to say thank you very much for joining us today. And, you know, do you have any remarks you'd like to close with other than to say this is the best interview you've ever given?
I was just about to say that.
This is the most fun I think I've ever had on the phone. This is awesome.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think it's also worth saying that this was a across-the-country call because I think, Steve, you're out west, right?
That's right. I'm in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and I'm in New York, so we're stretched across the country right now for this call.
Well, you know, we used to do these things by telegram, and it works much better by telephone. But
well, it's an homage to the virtual office. So,
that's
Jamie
right.
And I work closely in the peer group together from the separate coast, and it all works out. So,
yeah, no,
that technology must be working.
Absolutely.
Well, Go ahead.
I would say it was a pleasure answering some of the questions, and hopefully, you know, anyone that takes some valuable time from their day and listens to it, hopefully they have some takeaways from it and they attend those sessions because it's certainly going to be, you know, exponentially more informative than we covered in a couple minutes here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this interview was really just a conference agenda promotion for you guys, but the timing might be perfect, and I feel like we had a pre-call and we had a pretty long agenda. We probably could talk for another hour or so, but the limits of a podcast are upon us. So
right. we could do SOSPG part 2.
Yeah.
Right.
So thanks, guys.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys, and
thank
we'll
you.
See you at the conference.
Absolutely.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.